The Baroque is a highly ornate and often extravagant style of architecture, music, painting, sculpture, and other arts that flourished in Europe from the early 17th until the mid-18th century. It followed the Renaissance style, with great innovations in dance appearing in the 17th century, originating at the French court under Louis XIV. And it is here that we see the first clear stylistic ancestor of classical ballet. Louis XIV was a major influence in the development and promotion of Baroque dance. Even at the age of 14, Louis was an accomplished dancer as the sun god Apollo, an image that he was to cultivate throughout his life.
Puissance. Plaisir.
During the 17th century, dancing had not only a great social importance, but could also carry political importance. Although celebrating traditions with masquerade balls had been around since the 14th century and all throughout the era of the Renaissance, masked balls did not really come to Europe until the 17th century. Hiding one's identity is the theme behind wearing masks at masquerade events. And particular masquerades were for the wealthy and posh, which required an exclusive invitation to participate. There was a strict code of conduct and behavior which had to be followed, and everyone had to come in full costume. Baroque means irregular in French and is said to originate from the Portuguese word barroco, meaning imperfect pearl, like the irregular shaped pearl that was used in the jewelry of the time. Carnival of Venice is an annual festival held in Venice, Italy, that ends with the Christian celebration of Lent, 40 days before Easter, the day before Ash Wednesday. The festival is world famous for its elaborate masks and currently seems to be growing in popularity since around the 80s or 90s. However, under the rule of the Holy Roman Emperor and later Emperor of Austria, Francis II, the festival was outlawed entirely in 1797, and the use of the masks became strictly forbidden. It reappeared gradually in the 19th century, but only for short periods, and usually for private feasts with rumored ritualistic activities.
Did you know Stanley Kubrick filmed his famous movie Eyes Wide Shut inside the Rothschild family's country estate? Theories swirl that Kubrick made his movie about the real-life ultra elite and their secret occultic gatherings. We'll take a look at these pictures that show an actual Rothschild event from 1972. On the surface, it looks like a pretty magnificent surrealist ball, but there are clear occult references. Much like the film Eyes Wide Shut, occult imagery is hidden throughout the night, starting with the invitations, which were written backwards. Reversal or inversion of sacred objects is typical of black magic and satanic rituals. The exterior of the Chateau de Ferrier is lit up in a moving orange light, giving it the appearance of a fiery inferno. This hat, designed by Dali, also has hidden symbolism of androgyny by having half of Mona Lisa's face. Harnessing the male and female power is important to practitioners of the left-hand path. And although Dali traditionally paints ants and grasshoppers in his paintings to evoke death, decay, and trauma, this work of art has scarab beetles, which symbolize the Egyptian mysticism of Osiris, the Sun King. This guest's costume resembles the famous painting Son of Man by Magritte. Both the apple and the eye of Horus symbolize the forbidden knowledge of Lucifer in the Garden of Eden. The hostess, Marie-Hélène de Rothschild, is seen wearing a giant horned head, crying real diamond tears. Is this a representation of the sacrifice to Baphomet, who will share wealth and riches only after sacrifice? It's not exactly clear when in 1972 this party took place, but from the look of the decorations and the menu, it's definitely a fertility ritual. The dinner table serves dismembered dolls and cracked skulls. For dessert, a human sacrifice in a bed of roses. The rose, of course, is a symbol used by many secret societies, and it represents virginity, fertility, sexuality, and immortality, as well as silence and secrecy. Here's Salvador Dali, who helmed the surrealist movement. At first, this could seem like a surrealism party in his honor, but consider the aims of the surrealism movement itself: to resolve the contradictory condition of dreams versus reality and allow the unconscious mind to express itself. Occult imagery is very real, and it's everywhere, in movies, television, music, and fashion. The power derived from these occult symbols and imagery is very real to the elitists that congregate in their separate reality.
So shall we burn thee once again this night, and in the flames that eat thine effigy, we shall read the sign, Midsummer sets us free.
He shall burn me once again!
Not with these flames.
Summer sets us free!
And that is just the tip of the iceberg. The elites are riddled with perverse secret societies that are obsessed with harnessing the power of dark forces.
For over 100 years, Skull and Bones members have included a president, vice presidents, Supreme Court justices, congressmen and senators, captains of science and industry, the very best of America.
Their war before, their advisor, their better.
There's the public perception of the occult, and then what is actually happening. It's fantasy and folklore versus the real, intangible, dark power that the elite are able to harness by being practitioners of the occult. And it's this very art and imagery that we see over and over again, that it's just the expression of their dark souls.
From over the course of the 12th and 13th century into the 14th century, a form of evil, which is directly traced by the Venetians themselves to the ancient Canaanite city of Tyre, had risen to great power in the north of the Adriatic Sea, the city of Venice, which has been in recent time, until he moved to London, the residence of Satan on earth. These people grew great power. They built a maritime power in the image of ancient Phoenicia, which is Canaan. Phoenicia is a Greek word. The people of that region were called the Canaanites, and the center of evil was Tyre. Tyre was destroyed by a great man Alexander the Great. But the principle of Tyre lived on. And it came into, through the Roman Empire, it came to reside in Venice. And from about 800 AD on, Venice was an increasing power in the Mediterranean and became a great sea power, which became a dictatorship over the Mediterranean over the period from the course of the 12th century into the beginning of the 13th century with the so-called Fourth Crusade. And I can tell you all the Crusades were frauds. They were all run by the Venetians. Nothing to do with Christianity, they had to do with something else. The Fourth Crusade was organized by Venice to conquer and loot Byzantium, which is its major competitor. And the Latin Empire in Byzantium was set up from 1204 to 1261, when a fellow called Michael Paleolog overthrew it on behalf of the Greeks. But Venice became a great looting power. It crushed every element of civilization. It imposed evil cults. It spread the cult of Aristotle throughout the Mediterranean and other cults. It looted everything. It imposed its debt every place. It manipulated nations into making war on one another. They weren't real nations, but they were whatever passed for at that time. They plunged Europe into war and usury and looting and bestiality and cruelty. And nothing could seem to stop it. The political institutions of Europe collapsed at about 1250, or over the period 1250 to 1267, in a series of wars. A leading figure of the late 13th century and early 14th century, Dante Alighieri, typified those who fought desperately to save civilization from this pestilence of Venice and the Venetians' Mongol allies, who are attacking Europe from the west, from the east. Venice's power grew. Dante was probably murdered by the Venetians after a trip into Venice and its area. The ideas of Dante lived on through various networks. Not only Dante, but there were great Franciscans and others who continued the tradition, the Augustinian tradition, and developed it then as before. Then in the middle of the century, the 14th century, the whole system collapsed in a chain reaction of bankruptcy, starting with the King of England discovering, by checking with his priest, that not only was usury a mortal sin, but that he, as the King of England, by continuing to pay his debts to usury, was actually contributing to the eternal damnation of the soul of his creditors. So the King of England repudiated his debts to the houses of Bardi and Peruzzi, which were Florentine-based, but they were key bankers of the period, who had looted every part of Europe through this bank. It's very much like the IMF conditionalities today. As a matter of fact, the IMF conditionalities are a repetition, a continuation of the Venetian tradition. They are evil. The people who run the IMF are evil. The bureaucrats of the IMF as a collectivity are purely evil. They are mass murderers. So these people were crushed, and their political power was crushed by their bankruptcy. There's an analogy today. I'm not Plutarch, and I'm not a priest of the cult of Apollo, as he was, but comparisons are sometimes permitted. Today, as then, in the middle of the 14th century, the new Venetian Empire, which is the British Empire, or the Anglo-Dutch Empire, or whatever you want to call it, it's the same thing, is based on financial power. All finance and monetary systems today are divorced entirely from trade and production. They're engaged in pure speculation, in usury, debt as a form of usury, the looting of countries, of whole regions of the world, the power of the ruling oligarchy, which are like Venetian families, Ford Foundation, this foundation, that foundation. This is what runs the United States, not the government. This is what runs the world, not the governments. The governments are run by these powerful families and their oligarchical connections, who control the Washington Post. They control the New York Times. They control the three TV networks. They control Jane Fonda. She might not admit it, but she's a real right-wing fascist, that Jane. They are looting the world. They have great power. People are afraid of them. They're afraid of the press. The Congress is afraid of the press. The Justice Department is controlled by these families. Everything is rotten is controlled by these families. We say, well, what if these people suddenly lose their financial power? What if these banks go bankrupt? What if the IMF is liquidated? What if the international monetary institutions don't function? What if there's no facility by which these institutions can exert their power over society? Something like that which happened during the 14th century, the so-called Dark Age.
In 1000, the Byzantine Empire underwent a fundamental crisis. That was the period when Venice started to take over more and more of Europe. And eventually, the power center shifted to the financial oligarchy in Venice. So then, in 1066, the Normans took over England, and the Saxons got defeated. And then eventually, Venice for a very long time remained the power center of the imperial structure. So you are really looking at a succession of different empires. Now, naturally, Venice in this period, in this long period, underwent changes, family changed, replaced others, but the oligarchical structure essentially remained the same.
The Venetians are very good at psychological warfare as well. That if you read Friedrich Schiller's Ghost Seer, you can see that what you do is you pretend to be people's friends. You find out what they want, what their weakness is, and you give it to them. If they want money, you give them money. If they want sex, you arrange for that. If they want drugs, you arrange for that. Whatever it is they want, their weaknesses, you feed them. And then you tell them, okay, I'm doing all this for you, and I just need these little favors. And you corrupt them. And you corrupt them until you can control them. And of course, you know what they're doing, so you can always blackmail them if they try to get out of line. But basically what controls them is the knowledge that if they don't go along with you, then they lose out on all these things they like. You know, if they play ball with you, then they become rich, they become famous, they have all of their desires sated, they get everything that they want, but in a mental state which is increasingly depraved and subject to manipulation. And that's also the Venetian method. That you win by corruption. And that the thing that the empire fears most of all is an honest man who isn't corruptible because he doesn't want those things.
With their reassurance of complete maritime dominance, the Venetian oligarchy used their power over the Mediterranean to internationally centralize the control and organization of money within their financial empire. Thus, no country could produce bullion for its own use, and all currency exchange had to take place in Venice.
They are lending money to the major houses of Europe, the nations, or what passed for nations at that point, the kingdom, various kingdoms and duchies and things like that. And so they get them into debt. Now, for example, the King of England was in significant debt to the Lombard bankers, which was the Venetian banking system, and in particular to the House of Bardi. And so the king, pledged as collateral the wool production of his kingdom. And then, he's going broke, and so he needs more money, so he borrows more money, and then he pledges all of the sheep as well. The key thing about this kind of debt farming, is that once you incur a debt, the debt never really goes away, because the interest rates that you have to pay, the money that you have to pay to service this debt, is such that you quit building your country and you start trying to pay your debt. And then you have to borrow more money to pay your debt because you get further behind, and then your interest rates get higher, your debt service becomes more, and you set off on a process that never really ends until everything blows up. But that's the Venetian method of control. And that method has not changed since the days of Venice.
The oligarchy proceeded to move north in search of a new capital from which to operate. They settled throughout northern Europe, opening their first major headquarters in Amsterdam, Holland. Centuries later, they consolidated their true base in 1763, upholding their public political headquarters in London, which remains still today.
My name is Robert Sepper. Thank you for watching, sharing, subscribing, and don't forget to leave a comment. See you soon.